Hello and welcome to Friday, everyone. You've earned it and we're gonna deliver it. I'm not sure that we're gonna deliver the sort of show that we normally do because I've been having a hell of a time getting Brett invested in me today. So we're gonna see if politics is enough. I got some awesome stuff though. We're gonna be talking about Greta Thunberg, her testimony before Congress. We've got a guy who makes the cops look reasonable and not bloodthirsty by comparison. We've got a little bit more on DC statehood, which is very exciting, obviously. And of course, we've got a can and a task to fill it. And I think that we've got some great garbage. I have some theories about what Brett's garbage person might be. No idea what the audience has chosen, but very excited to find out. So Brett, what do you think? You gonna be into this thing?
I'm just really excited that I haven't really looked at myself today. And now that I see whatever's happening on this side of my face, I am glad that I put no time into this. I'm glad for the natural beauty that exists because we're all naturally beautiful.
We are.
I flumped it back, but I still have this weird patch of hair that grows further down than the other patch of hair.
Look, it's really context. So if this is you waking up, having a start to your morning and getting ready, then yeah, you've failed. But if this is you like literally falling asleep with your face on your keyboard, I think you're doing a pretty good job.
He's been up for hours, ladies and gentlemen, and yeah, he's still just like, I should have taken the time to do this.
Okay. You know, this is so okay. It is. And we're gonna check in throughout the hour on it. We're gonna have our culture war hair correspondent look into it. But anyway, with that, why don't we prep for what is going to be an hour of news? We can see what other superlatives apply to it afterward. But anyway, everyone who's watching, thank you for watching. Thank you, by the way, if you tuned into our Earth Day special yesterday, which Brett was a part of as well. We had a lot of fun. So that was fun. Got to talk about, there's a lot of concern about the environment, and I think it's well justified. There was a little bit of good news, though. Some of the things that Biden did, not so bad. Good news on bald eagles. But it's kind of difficult. You really have to hunt to track down that good environmental news, but we're always on the lookout for it.
I do want to say one quick announcement. Now that I realized that I was still wearing my big stupid headphones, but I had already plugged in these little ones. So it was just
so cozy. Those were just holding your earbuds in.
They were just at that point like winter earmuffs.
You've been up for hours?
I've been up for hours, John. I do want to say one thing that's actually relevant to any conversation is tonight. We've done this once before, but tonight on Common Room, the viewers will be in the Common Room. It'll be myself and Brooke. We tried this. We're using Discord. So everyone, Galfar will tell you how to manage getting in the Discord and everything. But essentially, we're gonna bring you in and have a discussion to answer the age-old questions. That's at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern at twitch.tv/TYT.
Viewer night. That's exciting.
Yeah.
You know what would be fun? Game night. We should do that.
Shut up.
Anyway, you gave up on it, okay?
Just stop.
Anyway, with that, please hit the like button. Share the stream. I know that like you can't think of a rational reason to hit the like button yet, but I swear we're gonna come up with one.
We're not helping anyway to inspire the people.
No, we're not. We're not. Anyway, okay, we're gonna do this thing. We're gonna do it semi right. Let's start now. Yesterday was Earth Day, and look, there's many great climate activists. There are. We talked to Wally Mazon from the Sunrise Movement on the Earth Day special yesterday. But I care about what Greta Thunberg is doing, because I know that she has a sort of unique ability to get the media to focus on the environment and climate change, and also get politicians to at least briefly worry that if they do the wrong thing, there will be consequences. So we're gonna have some of her testimony, but I wanted to start off with her response to the wrong sort of politicians. So here is a video of Boris Johnson making pretty clear what he thinks about environmentalists influencing politics.
This is not all about some expensive, politically correct, green act of bunny hugging, or however you want to put it. I'm not even with bunny hugging, but you know what I'm driving at, friends and colleagues. This is about growth and jobs.
Okay, So look, some of that isn't necessarily so bad. I think that a focus on that as a consequence of environmental policy is a good thing too. But like the, even in trying to help a bit, he has to belittle people who care about nature, who care about animals. Like, and there's just sometimes the it's just the selling, it's such a bad sell for yourself. Like the prospect that you're against people who wanna hug bunnies. Everybody wants to hug bunnies. Have you seen a bunny?
That's
they're adorable.
It's like maybe if it were about bunny hugging, you'd have more people behind you. Like this is not about things people want to do. I personally, in my sales job, that's like if Coca-Cola was like, it's not that great. This is not about if you're thirsty. It's like, but it you can why kick out the thirsty population from the calculus?
Exactly. I don't get it. The weird way of making that point was noticed by other people, including Greta Thunberg. People realized this when they realized that her Twitter profile had been changed to bunny hugger. So she is always on there looking for a timely Twitter profile. Some of you might recall, I will never get tired of reminding you of this, of the time that Donald Trump, in one of the weirdest moments of his presidency, I would say this is top 20 weirdest moments, tweeted, "So ridiculous, Greta must work on her anger management problem, then go to a good old fashioned movie with a friend. Chill, Greta, chill. I'm not going to make the case necessarily, but I will never stop thinking that that is at least a good chance that he's implying that she needs to have sex because of some sort of Netflix and chill type thing." I'm just saying,
John, that is you.
No.
That would got real
go
creepy.
To a movie with a friend, chill, Greta, chill. Come on. That's bizarre. I'm not saying I'm definitely right in the way that it's bizarre, but I think that mine has as good a chance as any of being the particular weird focus he's had on Greta.
It's called gilding the lily, John. He already did something stupid. You didn't need to paint it over with something to make it look more elaborate. Like
no, I think. Well, whatever. I said I was
when I woke up, I didn't need to throw up everywhere. And thanks to the analysis I got on the damage report today, I need to like just drink and pass out.
Look, a lot of people have as a philosophy, you got to laugh once a day. I make you vomit once a day. I think that that's healthy too.
John, I'm just glad it wasn't me this time.
Thank you.
Usually, I don't get to be the person who goes, wow, that was too far.
I think it. I'm never gonna stop thinking. Anyway, she responded with, "So ridiculous. Donald must work on his anger management problem, then go to a good old fashioned movie with a friend. Chill, Donald, chill." Over his stop the count. The idea that somewhere she was drawing at least a little bit of pleasure from him desperately trying to stay in office will never make me not feel good. And of course, he lost in that. So look, the bunny hugging thing, I don't think that's helpful. I think that we as a society should be beyond a bit of the sort of demonization or mocking of people who care about the environment, especially if you're trying to do the right thing, which Johnson is at least, he wants you to think that at the very least. We're in the horrible position we're in because for decades, people didn't give a damn what environmentalists thought and thought that that's a super remote thing. They were saying the same thing as him in a slightly different way before that, no, I'm not gonna worry about that. Let's worry about jobs or the economy or whatever. Like they didn't get it then. He still doesn't really get it now.
Yeah, I mean, there's a point and there's the point. The point is whatever it takes to get people behind, you know, environmentally responsible legislation and governmental initiatives, let's do it. And if Greta Thunberg's out there saying like, I'm fine being a bunny hugger, which is horrible. And then it just like, leave it to Boris Johnson to take like the cute happiness away from the term bunny hugging. Like he's like, oh yes, a bunny hugger. Like now it sounds like a disparaging term, which he made it into. But if there's people out there like the coal union that recently got behind, you know, guarantees from the government that yes, they can go forward with their initiative to create green jobs as long as the coal miners who are out of jobs are taken care of. Fine with that.
Love it. Think that is great.
I think it's just we need a big old ampersand. We need, you know, the big umbrella that we all are now, you know, underneath because of the high UV index these days needs to be as big as possible, including both those who want jobs to be created and those who love just finding a bunny and hugging it. So long as it's not made of chocolate, because then you get a real weird melting situation.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Greta Thunberg did speak with Congress on Earth Day, and as is her way, she kept it real. And so we've got a couple different excerpts from that want to show you. Here's some of her opening remarks.
"I don't represent any financial or political interests. I'm not a lobbyist, so I can't negotiate, make deals, or compromise. I have nothing to offer you, nor am I a scientist. All I can do is to urge you to listen to and act on the science and to use your common sense. And I'm not even going to explain why we need to make real drastic changes and dramatically lower our emissions in line with the overall current best available science. It is the year 2021. The fact that we are still having this discussion, and even more that we are still subsidizing fossil fuels directly or indirectly, using taxpayer money, is a disgrace. It is a clear proof that we have not understood the climate emergency at all."
You know, I wish sometimes that I could really get into her head and get a good idea of how optimistic or pessimistic she is, because we talk about climate a good bit, but if you're just constantly dwelling in it and talking with these world leaders and having them try to co-opt you constantly with their promises and their numbers and their projections, which we'll get to, like after a few years of dealing with that, I don't know how you could be particularly optimistic. But I don't know, what did you think about her remarks?
You've got to be optimistic. I think they're great remarks, and it's hilarious that all these people that are so, they're religious, like if she was saying anything other than like protect the earth, they would be like, this is the Messiah. Like there's such a grace, collectedness that I never had as a child that she possesses, that really does.
You don't have it now.
Great, thank you, John. That really communicates all of the things that keep us together. Is that better, John? Do you want me to do a Greta Thunberg?
We like your Boris Johnson. I do like your Boris Johnson. Francesca's got the best Greta Thunberg, and then Kate McKinnon. But I like the comments, obviously. What we heard there, I've heard from her quite often. By the way, I didn't say that he didn't have the grace. I said we didn't have the grace. But anyway, I've insulted myself in comparison to Greta Thunberg many times over the years. But anyway, I do want to talk about the fact that she was speaking to Congress on the same day that Biden had put forward his new heightened emissions reduction standards for the next couple of decades. And so what does she think about those sorts of promises? And I'm sure she's not directly responding to Biden, but Biden is a politician, the same way that the European politicians she often spars with are. So here's what she has to say.
"If you compare the current so-called climate policies to the overall current best available science, you clearly see that there's a huge gap. The gap between what we are doing and what actually needs to be done in order to stay below the 1.5 degrees Celsius target is widening by the second. And it may seem like we are asking for a lot. And you will, of course, say that we are naive. And that's fine. But at least we are not so naive that we believe things will be solved through countries and companies making vague, distant, insufficient targets without any real pressure from the media and the general public.
Yeah, well, we tried to throw up some pressure against Biden. We talked about those emissions reduction standards being raised on both the Young Turks as well as on our Earth Day special yesterday. And it's certainly better than not having them as an aspirational goal, which is what we would have if Trump was still president. But he can't do it unilaterally, at least not in the way that he's pursuing it right now. There is a lot of time for the Senate to get involved and wreck the entire thing, as well as future presidents. You know, like I doubt a President Carlson is going to feel like emissions reductions are should be one of our national priorities. So I think her pessimism about that, rather than like, here's something we've just done, this massive thing. We did it, we already gave the money. It's constantly 2030, 2035, 2050, that sort of thing. Those things are important, but it seems all too often that that's all we really get.
Yeah, it's this is the one of the most frustratingly difficult things to motivate political figures to do, because it is so obvious that it needs to be done. Everybody who takes their time to, like, you know, figure out the problem knows what the solutions are, and the stakes are so high. That is all the recipe for getting things done theoretically. But the politicization of it, combined with the fact that it's this looming thing in a non-specific future, mm-hmm. We are the, you know, the metaphor exists of the frog getting boiled in water slowly mm-hmm. and not really freaking out along the way. Like, that's the problem we're in. And that's what makes it even more frustrating, because we have like this whole metaphor for when this kind of thing happens. To describe stuff that is so frustratingly avoidable, but we just don't act. And I hope that the tide of political discourse is turning in such a way where folks on the right, frankly, have been exposed as not such non-serious people that we can say, all right, can we agree that the folks on the right who are fighting against this are just engaging in theater? So we're gonna go ahead and make the changes that need to be made.
Mm-hmm. I mean, in theory, we could if you didn't have a critical mass of Democratic senators that are also engaged in a form of political theater, pretending to care about things like workers and stuff like that, but stopping the actual systemic change necessary to protect them, to improve their Latin life. Yeah, I agree. Greta Thunberg, in her comments to Congress yesterday, also talked about why it is right now that politicians feel like they can get away with doing nothing, but what their kids will one day think about them. And I want to take a look at this.
Either you do this, or you're going to have to start explain to your children and the most affected people why you are surrendering on the 1.5 degree target. Given up without even trying. Well, what I'm here to say is that unlike you, my generation will not give up without a fight. And to be honest, I don't believe for a second that you will actually do this. The climate crisis doesn't exist in the public debate today. And since it doesn't really exist, and the general level of awareness is so absurdly low, you will still get away with continuing to contribute to the destruction of present and future living conditions. And I know I'm not the one who's supposed to ask questions here, but there is something I really do wonder. How long do you honestly believe that people in power like you will get away with it? How long do you think you can continue to ignore the climate crisis, the global aspect of equity and historic emissions without being held accountable? You get away with it now, but sooner or later, people are going to realize what you have been doing all this time.
Very real. They clear, like many of the politicians watching that are thinking, yes, I really do think that I can get away with it. Maybe on some level, like, oh, I like bunnies too. I wish we could do something. But she's being really naive, and the scientists are probably exaggerating the timeline. Someday we'll get around to it. I doubt many of them are honestly thinking, screw Miami and Manhattan, they can flood. But what they're doing in practice will result in those things. And they're clearly not scared. They're not scared in the short term that stopping the Green New Deal from being passed is going to hurt them electorally. They don't seem to be scared in the long term about the actual environmental consequences or the fact that they will be remembered by future generations as absolute traitors to the existence of our species. She seems to indicate at the end that a turning point is going to come. I don't know, Brett, do you feel like we're close to that turning point where the environmental conversation will be a big enough part of political discourse to actually wreck people's careers, to force them to change?
I mean, the only time that this happens is really in local politics. It's the pothole thing. Like, they say all politics is local. And so it will, I mean, we look at the places that are affected first. And those places, and it's, we can go region by region, but like places with coastlines that are fragile, where the richest people are living in places where they would lose their homes, that will have a political effect. But will it have a political effect? What will end up happening is, rather than face the thing, those people also have like, typically have investments in things like big corporations, which would need to change their ways in order for tangible changes to happen. But when it comes to whether I'm going to cast my vote for a politician or not, those politicians will identify, well, there are easier ways for me to make this voter happy than tangible climate change.
Yeah.
And some magical thing happens along the way where kids start out learning the right lessons and acting the right way. And then something happens somewhere in your life where you realize you get kids, you get a house, maybe you get specific responsibilities that are right here in front of you. And that makes it easier to ignore all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So if you're asking if I think that something will change from the age old, you know, intergenerational dispute where everybody makes the same complaints that the young are too idealistic and unreasonable, and the old are too crotchety and conservative and have given up their idealism, I don't think that's gonna change. But hopefully we can find that equilibrium where we say, well, here's a practical thing that's really affecting your lives. I'm still gonna make the argument that we should remain idealistic and we should do these things that seem, from a values perspective and a legislative perspective, smart and good at the same time. But it's all about from a political standpoint, making those arguments and when you have the opportunity, delivering on those promises.
Yeah. Yeah. And also making sure that people know about the fact that you've delivered. Like you were talking about, you know, how one of the things that makes this difficult is that the crisis we're trying to solve is at least in some ways viewed as being very far off, but the benefits that could come from dealing with it don't have to be far off. Like we could be generating jobs in 6 months or in a year. Like we could be cutting, you know, pollution and ending some of the needless lost lives due to air pollution every year. Like we could be getting those benefits very soon potentially, but we gotta make sure that people actually know about them.
And one of the last point for me is like one of the main thinkers on the right who is against this kind of legislation made a huge admission. But a mistake revealing how totally stupid he is. And that was Ben Shapiro when he's like, listen, we don't need Green New Deal stuff. Like humans adapt. It's like, well, the Green New Deal is the adaptation. That's it. That's all we're saying. You say, human beings will find a way to make their way out of all these things through ingenuity and, you know,
that he doesn't support.
It's like, well, that's the thing we just did. This is a list of all that stuff. Great idea, Ben. We're doing it. And it seems like the only reason you don't want to go along with it is because it was my idea on the left, you know, because it was our idea. Fine, I don't care. It's your idea, Ben. Great idea. We should use ingenuity to make these changes. Great. Yeah. I've got a 14-page list that as soon as Marjorie Taylor Greene is done reading it in 6 months, maybe she can pass it to you.
Yeah. Yeah. That reason also that he gets support from, you know, the rich and corporations and all that. But look, you talked about the frog in the pot and the turning up of the water as an analogy. Like the thing that Ben Shapiro is doing, there's another one of those. It's the guy that like It's literally about flooding. The guy who's on his roof because of the flooding or whatever, and like a boat comes, then a helicopter comes, and he keeps saying that God is gonna save him. And when he gets to heaven, God's like, dude, I sent a boat and a helicopter. That is what's going on. We've got the ideas are already, we know everything we need to know about the science. We don't need to wait for some massive technological leap that might or might not come. We can start making common sense changes now. Ben Shapiro.
I love.
Anyway, final thought.
The final thought is something that we should always remember when Ben Shapiro is lauded for making these great intellectual points. He said, well, I mean, what happens when the coastline rises? People just sell their houses and move inland. And then there's that great video that someone made where they just very slowly break a hole in the drywall and stick their head through and go, sell the houses to who, Ben? Aquaman.
It's a classic. It's a classic. Little pandemic throwback for you. It has been 1 year since Donald Trump decided to be even worse on the pandemic than he'd been already. Here is what he had to say, a suggestion, not to us, a suggestion to the medical and scientific world about how to deal with COVID.
Brian. Thank you very much. So I'm gonna ask Bill a question that probably some of you are thinking of if you're totally into that world, which I find to be very interesting. So supposing we hit the body with a tremendous, whether it's ultraviolet or just very powerful light. And I think you said that hasn't been checked, but you're going to test it. And then I said, supposing you brought the light inside the body, which you can do either through the skin or in some other way. And I think you said you're going to test that too. Sounds interesting.
We'll get the right folks who could.
Right. And then I see the disinfectant where it knocks it out in a minute, 1 minute. And is there a way we can do something like that by injection inside or almost a cleaning? Because you see it gets on the lungs and it does a tremendous number in the lungs. So it'd be interesting to check that. So that you're going to have to use medical doctors with. But it sounds interesting to me. So we'll see, but the whole concept of the light, the way it kills it in 1 minute, that's pretty powerful.
Brett
took some notes. I remember I saw Zoolander in the theaters and I was like, this is funny. And then I went back and watched it a year later and I was like, no, this is really funny. Because you know, there's stuff you don't pick up on the first time. He didn't just say ultraviolet light. He said ultraviolet, or if not ultraviolet, a really powerful light.
Like Philips Hue, perhaps.
Like, you know, the bat signal, sans the bat.
That comes out of a Care Bear's chest, maybe.
Yes. Do we have the stare technology? The Care Bear stare technology. It's just like, even his dumb is more dumb than dumb, because everyone gets that ultraviolet light. Like, that is a specific part of the light spectrum that has more energy. That's the thing that tans your skin, right?
Like, well, he's not familiar with that because of the spraying, but
very powerful infrared. Get a giant remote control. I love that he's not president anymore.
Like, it makes it much easier to laugh.
There's less like, oh no, there are consequences. Like, we're still shoveling through the consequences. Like, quietly, we vaccinated millions of human beings in what is just like, for at least in Los Angeles, was like an undeniably efficient way. I love that. And I forgot that he says he doesn't want you, he's like, medical doctors. We'll use medical doctors for that idea.
Of course.
The other one, we'll get some people with education degrees. And the other one, we'll get like Doc Rivers, Dr. J. They can handle it.
Doc Brown. He's a bit wild, a bit out there, but I respect him, damn it.
Is Marty available?
Like, my favorite is probably the almost like a cleaning. Like, oh, okay, like a cleaning. That's good.
And the hand motion.
Like a cleaning. Like a cleaning through the skin or some other way. Use your imagination, people.
It's obviously a guy who's never cleaned anything before.
No, he doesn't. It's not just that he doesn't get medicine. He doesn't get wiping. Like, he doesn't get anything. Now, as you pointed out, he's not president anymore, so we can laugh a little bit. Just briefly, then we'll go back to laughing. At that point, when he said that, America had 49,605 deaths. We have had more than 10 times as many since then. And I would argue those are connected facts. Him being the guy who could deliver that line, almost assured that we would lose 10 times as many in the future after it.
Brian. Thank you very much. So I'm gonna ask Bill a question that probably some of you are thinking of if you're totally into that world, which I find to be very interesting. So supposing we hit the body with a tremendous, whether it's ultraviolet or just very powerful light, and I think you said that hasn't been checked, but you're going to test it. And then I said, supposing you brought the light inside the body, which you can do either through the skin or in some other way. And I think you said you're going to test that too. Sounds interesting.
We'll get the right folks who could.
Right, and then I see the disinfectant where it knocks it out in a minute, 1 minute. And is there a way we can do something like that by injection inside or almost a cleaning? Because you see it gets on the lungs and it does a tremendous number in the lungs. So it'd be interesting to check that. So that you're going to have to use medical doctors with. But it sounds interesting to me. So we'll see. But the whole concept of the light, the way it kills it in 1 minute, that's pretty powerful.
That is one of the most insane things anyone has ever said at a podium, right? Is that
yes?
Extreme to say that's
no. It is true that is said. Insane to say we should put bleach in people to make them healthier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's insane. What makes it worse, I guess, is it's, you know, while we've lost tens of thousands of Americans, this is what he's saying about, you know, public health and has saved people. What makes it even worse, though, is what led to him saying it. Now, he said many crazy things over the course of the couple of months that they did those things. What made this crazier was Donald Trump is not a smart man. He's not a curious man. He doesn't have any of these characteristics. And lots of people, and I would say I have largely criticized him for that, saying, why don't you care more about the world? Why don't you want to learn? What makes this so embarrassing is that I think this was a demonstration that I should have thought before requesting that, because this was what we got when he was eager about science. And I'll provide evidence. You can see it on his face, though. You could try it with medical doctors, right? So what happened was that morning he had had a briefing, and the briefing talked about a few things, including the fact that UV light on some surfaces could sterilize it when COVID was on that surface. He drew all of the wrong conclusions from it, and his curiosity being sparked led to him being dumber than ever before. So after they have the briefing, they're gonna do this public briefing. Privately, some of his aides were worried, we read. The COVID task force had met earlier to discuss most recent findings. Trump was briefed by a small group of aides, but it was clear to some aides that he hadn't processed all the details before he left to speak to the press. One former senior Trump aide said, a few of us actually tried to stop it in the West Wing hallway. I actually argued that President Trump wouldn't have the time to absorb it and understand it, but I lost and it went how it did. Yeah, he was interested in science for the first time in his life, and it led to him being dumber than he'd ever been before.
There's a scene in Guardians 2 where the only person who's capable of hitting the button is Baby Groot, who's like this big. And it is a giant button. And they're like, this one, practice. And he like puts his hand right up by the button and just hits the other button. Like that's Baby Groot Trump. That's just like, yeah. We use bleach to clean things on surfaces. Got it. Put it in their bodies. That's what we're doing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, look, I've got a little bit more that I want to show you. In his lowest moment during the pandemic, Trump had more to say about bleach and disinfectant and all of this, while also complimenting himself along the way. So let's go to this next section.
Probably an easy thing, relatively speaking, for you. I would like you to speak to the medical doctors to see if there's any way that you can apply light and heat to cure. You know, if you could, and maybe you can, maybe you can't. Again, I say maybe you can, maybe you can't. I'm not a doctor, but I'm like a person that has a good, you know what.
If you can't come up with the word brain, use that to inform other decisions that you make about intelligence and science and all of that.
No one said you know what about their brain before.
You know what?
You only say you know what about like something you can't say on TV.
Yeah. Maybe that's what he's talking about. I'm not sure.
Like I got
here's the thing though.
I don't. My mind can't summon it. I don't. You do though.
You do.
You're a medical doctor.
He had, I think this was like a brief flash of, wait, maybe what I'm saying is not exactly nailing it, which is why he said, hey, I'm just saying, consider it. I don't know. I'm not a doctor. All I'm saying is I should be doing this via stream of consciousness live on television. I could talk to her anytime, not on camera. I'm choosing not to. I'm doing it in front of the press, which is a weird choice to make. Now, really fast, Brett, before we finalize this, I want to give you her response. Remember, we've criticized her in part for this response. Here is what she had to say a year ago today.
Have you ever heard of that? The heat and the light relative to certain viruses, yes, but relative to this virus?
That is a treatment. I mean, certainly fever is a good thing when you have a fever. It helps your body respond. But not as I've not seen heat or light.
I think it's a great thing to look at. I mean, you know, okay.
And then for a few seconds, he just looks to the camera for approval. She said, well, sure, fever. Man, he doesn't even realize what she's doing, how she's trying to protect him and how stupid he looks there.
It's like when someone you're trying to like look at a code for like she's just trying to foist benefit of the doubt onto the guy. And she is also mixing it with bedside manner and like America's the patient in that metaphor. And she's trying to be like, I know that I need to give you, like he's not doing it. I need to give you some semblance of peace of mind and reassurance that the people, you know, driving this flying umbrella are somewhat responsible and you know, someone's holding it down to the ground, but she can't. She's trying to find that one kernel of truth in the insanity, which is yes, when you have a fever, your body's warmer and heat is, it's part of that whole process. But she's just saying, I get it. In the moment, she couldn't just say, everyone just don't listen to that. We are all now dumber because of it. I'm sorry, just ignore. And I hate to use this word, but what the president said. I don't like using that word with him.
She'd said it.
Yeah, but she had to, and that was her attempt to do it.
Yeah, because she wanted to still have influence. We don't know what it ended up being good for. She implies some things, but Kurt Berkler in the chat implied that he might have gotten this from that meeting. He might have gotten it from Stranger Things, though. I mean, if it works on the Shadow Monster, we're gonna heat this sucker out of Will Byers' body.
It's anyway, so crazy. It's like a piano teacher who's like listening to them play the wrong notes, and she's like, "Ah, he's trying." Yeah. You know,
no, I know exactly what it is.
I'm getting paid.
I have during the pandemic, I have a remote trainer. When she encourages me, wow. I don't think she gets it. I know how unearned the encouragement is, and it only makes me feel worse because I can look to my own failures. Trump can't do that. It would work for him. But anyway, we do these throwbacks to remember this crazy year that we've just had. That like we can sort of laugh about it. Maybe we have to laugh about it, but that was such a low point. And the idea that a significant chunk of the entire country watched that and thought, I trust him more than all of the scientists in the world. I'm not even gonna question it. He's right, whatever he says goes, the bleach guy. Over the last week, we've exposed you, regrettably, to some really bad arguments for why DC does not deserve to be a state, why its inhabitants don't deserve to have political representation. Here is one of the worst arguments, and then an immediate response that I absolutely love.
Yes, Wyoming is smaller than Washington by population, but it has three times as many workers in mining, logging, and construction, and 10 times as many workers in manufacturing. In other words, Wyoming is a well-rounded working class state.
One Senate Republican said that D.C. wouldn't be a, quote, well-rounded working class state. I had no idea there were so many syllables in the word white.
That's good. That's pretty good. I like that. Tom Cotton thought he was very clever. Brett.
I hadn't seen that.
Isn't that good? Mondaire Jones, new representative. That is very good.
That's all he could mean.
That's what he means.
Wyoming has no jobs in what? Like Wyoming doesn't have as many workers as DC does. It doesn't contribute as much. Like, what am I going to say? It's so easy to say stuff back to that. I love when they think they have a gotcha point. Here's my point back. Like,
does he actually think that's a gotcha?
I would just say, dear Tom Cotton, if I were to add up all the workers in Wyoming, they would not equal all the workers in DC. Mm-hmm. But I still think Wyoming should be a state. Like, well, what?
That's very fair of you. Yeah, they have a lot of people who log. Okay, well then I guess Canada's 20 times better than us. They cut down trees all the time up there. It's such a stupid, asinine argument.
You just chose what jobs you like based on the place you like. You can't do that. That's not like a system of belief of in law. Like, pick the industry. Well rounded. Pick the industry in DC. Like, we have people who have, you know, part-time jobs. We have people who are in the service industry. Does that not matter to him?
Yeah.
No, it doesn't. It's just the votes that he wants. That is such a bad non-argument. He hasn't made any real argument. And all he is doing is that political theater thing where you're just like, guys, we can all look around and agree that that was the dumbest set of words that all add up to a non-point that we can see through and not just because it's pasty.
Yeah, that's true. I think the issue, I don't have a great read on how genuinely intelligent Tom Cotton is. So maybe he is impressed by that argument. I would argue I don't think he is, but he knows that it doesn't have to be impressive. And that is the result of the fact that everybody who votes for him doesn't care about any of this. They have not reached the conclusion that DC should not be a state based on an analysis of how many people work in manufacturing. Like, that's not. They just don't want it to be a state. They don't care what argument he makes. They just want him to vote to not make it a state. And technically, he has to say something. But so he is filling the air with noise, and then he gives them what they want. He could say virtually anything, and the donors who want the GOP to be in charge would still like it. The base would still like it. So it can be a pathetic argument. What's the difference? What is Fox News, like, is Tucker Carlson gonna be like, you know, I really don't want DC to be a state either, but I wish that we would come equipped with better arguments. Nobody's gonna do that. So what's the point? Why be better? Why would we talk about this with Charlie Kirk all the time? His tweets are absolute dog crap. Why would they be better? He gets 20,000 retweets on the stupidest thoughts a human has ever had. They will be as dumb and pathetic as they can be and still succeed. And on the right, that bar is buried at the center of the earth.
It's very yeah, I agree with all that. And also his argument is very obviously racist, but it doesn't need to be racist to be un-American. Like, sure. I don't need to call it racist to say that what he just said is that certain Americans are worth more in terms of democracy than other Americans. He just said,
yep, that's what he said.
I've decided the people of a person in Wyoming is more valuable than a person in DC, and not even more valuable. A person in Wyoming is more of an American to him, and their votes should be worth more. They should have more representation than an American living in DC. That is psychotic. Yeah. That is un-American, and he should suffer the consequences from that. But instead, he's going to say, at least if I make a racist argument, I've now set up this idea that if someone points it out as racist, now I get to say, why you keep calling me racist? That's totally like someone being like, someone who keeps crashing their car into the wall, getting angry when people say, you should stop crashing your car into the wall. Like, it's still a problem, and I'm right.
I agree with what you're saying. I wanted to give Representative Jones a little bit more time to make his point, which he did. And you're talking about Republicans freaking out when you call them racist. Well, they're going to demonstrate that right here.
I have had enough of my colleagues' racist insinuations that somehow the people of Washington, D.C. are incapable or even unworthy of our democracy. One of my House Republican colleagues said that D.C. shouldn't be a state because the district doesn't have a landfill. My goodness, with all the racist trash my colleagues have brought to this debate, I can see why they're worried about having a place to put it. The truth is, there is no good faith argument for disenfranchising over 700,000 people, Mr. Speaker, most of whom are people of color. Of color. These desperate objections are about fear. Fear that in D.C. their white supremacist politics will no longer play. Fear that soon enough white supremacist politics won't work anywhere in America. Fear that if they don't rig our democracy, they will not win. Today, Democrats are standing up for a multiracial democracy. To democratize all 51 states in this country. I yield back.
So in the middle there, the Republicans had objections, they stopped, there was a huge back and forth, and then he was thankfully allowed to continue after a bunch of people on the Republican side trying to shout over him. But he made great points there. He's totally right about what their actual opposition is about. It's not that they genuinely believe no taxation without representation if you chop down trees for a living. They just don't want more Democratic senators, and they don't want to have to compete for the vote of people that live in DC.
Yeah, and he's just point, it's something feels intuitively wrong about one side getting more votes from human beings and from citizens in America and losing. Like that's weird, right? We have, if you were worried about they want to be this embattled group. And maybe because they are the minority, like they don't get as many votes on the right. And that has been the trick. America has made these awesome promises. And I love those promises. America promised to be a country that runs by the will of the majority without jeopardizing the rights of the minority. That's what the Bill of Rights is for. That's a distinctly progressive worldview of America. It made those great promises that this is a place where you can come and pursue your dreams and reach for the stars and grab out and get them.
Yeah,
but it didn't always follow through on those promises. It doesn't follow through. It at the beginning when it said that, it was like unless you're black or a woman, like that was it. And it wasn't until the Civil War and 1920 when each of those groups finally got the ability to have the opportunity to have that promise be delivered for them. And all I'm trying to do, I won't speak for anyone else. All I'm trying to do is help America live up to its promises. And yeah. One thing you can do in this place that is a representative democracy, to use their terms, like a republic that is a constitutional republic, is at least have the democracy be representative. And it's just so very not, and so transparently not, and it's so glaring in that situation when Tom Cotton makes such a stupid, baseless argument as that, and then gets called out and everyone throws a tantrum when people just call it what it is.
Exactly. Yeah, agreed. Well, we'll be staying on the story, seeing what happens. It passed in the House twice in 1 year, effectively. In theory, maybe the Senate would vote for it, one would think. I would caution you that if you think that everyone is just gonna look at this purely politically, that might lead you to believe, well, then wouldn't someone like Manchin want this? Because then the Democrats would stay in the majority. Sure, but then there'd be a buffer where he wouldn't be able to unilaterally tank every piece of legislation he wants. So I don't know, it could go either way, maybe. We'll see. It's the end of the week, and so it's time to take out the trash. Every week, we find the political garbage strewn throughout the country, sometimes in the state, sometimes in the capital, and we throw it here in our convenient little googly-eyed trash. We haven't actually said who's gonna go first. Is it cool for Brett to go first? I will, okay,
John,
I
will go first.
This is a story that I've gotten some requests. It is a person that I have become quite used to throwing in the trash recently, even though it doesn't seem to matter. It's just totally cool that he's garbage. But I am going to be throwing one Tucker Carlson, who I think that's what he does when the servant gets too close. But anyway, he's absolute garbage. Why in this particular case? Well, for everything. But in particular right now, I want to focus on what we found out about senior year college Tucker Carlson. And it began with this clip on his show.
Jeff Bezos had one of his minions, a mentally unbalanced middle-aged man called Eric Wempel, pull our dusty college yearbook and call around to see if we'd done anything naughty at the age of 19. That sounds like fun. Let us know if you hear any good stories. But before Bezos drops any more of his billions on opposition research, you should know that it will not affect any election outcome. This is a news show. It's not a political campaign. No one here is running for anything or plans to.
We should be so lucky, but I don't believe him. Anyway, there, he's trying to get out in front of something. They've been talking to people to find out things about him, and he wants to tell his audience, no matter what comes, don't worry about it. It's just naughty stuff when we were young. And by the way, the guy who's asking questions is bad, so it doesn't matter what I did, it's a bad guy, so don't care about it. Well, it didn't take long to figure out what it was he was potentially worried about them finding. Maybe there's other stuff, but this is what they found so far. Travis Akers tweeted this out. Perhaps this is the story that Tucker Carlson was trying to get ahead of. In his college yearbook, he listed himself as a member of the Dan White Society. Dan White was the man who murdered Harvey Milk. And you can see there, we're gonna return to the Harvey Milk. Just first of all, because we need to understand who Tucker Carlson is. Understand that this is the actual picture that he posed for his college yearbook. And I can't think of a more perfect representation of who Tucker Carlson is. Sometimes people say that he's like the stereotypical villain from all the 80s college movies. No, I think he's like the one person that both the jocks and the nerds in those movies would beat up. But anyway, we also have a close up on
punched in the face by a ghost who also hates him.
He's reacting to a punch right then. That is
the swoop of his hair. The swoop of his hair is actually just, it was totally straight, but he's getting, it's flying back as he's getting punched in the face by every spirit who lived and went before him, even the ones to which he pays homage with his strange outfit.
There's something about the jacket and the tie and the little face. It looks like he's spying a tray of cucumber sandwiches across the room. He just wants one. Anyway,
it's weird that he couldn't find a smaller tie.
That's like,
it's
true.
Weird his bow tie is so true. Enormous. It's so
yeah,
weird.
It's so huge. Anyway, the big issue here though isn't just his face and his whole thing. It's this. This is his actual entry in the yearbook. He was part of the Christian Fellowship, the Jesse Helms Foundation, and the Dan White Society. And as was pointed out before, Carlson would have been about 9 when White assassinated Milk and Moscone in November 1978. These assassinations were a major story at the time, not only because they involved the killings of two government officials, but because Milk was the first openly gay person to be elected to office in the state of California. So he, like, you get what's going on here. So first of all, the yearbook is freely available online. You can check it, and they have. There are no other references to the Dan White Society in that yearbook, implying, if this makes it better, that it isn't an actual society, because I assume it can't be. It is just a thing that he thought would be funny to put in his yearbook, that he is part of a club that just looks up to a guy that he only knows about because he murdered a gay politician. That is what Tucker Carlson, the naughty thing that in senior year of college, by the way, he thought would be funny to be remembered for the rest of his life.
This is not taking a cow up the stairs knowing that it can't walk down the stairs. This is not, short sheeting someone's bed, right? This is like, I am going to put in the yearbook as a literal adult that I am in the society devoted to the guy who killed Harvey Milk.
Yep.
And we always hear about his like stepmom, the Swanson whatever, but we don't hear about Tucker Carlson's dad a lot. You need to watch an HBO documentary series called The Lady in the Dale.
Yep.
Tucker's dad. That's Tucker's dad. Tucker's dad is this wildly, strangely obsessed anti-trans reporter in the 70s. Who to this day, when they interview him, still will not, he misgenders this woman who, is a very interesting figure in a documentary. And he's still wildly obsessed about it. Then you look back through and you're like, well, it makes sense that Tucker would be this way. But the difference is you'd think that like someone like Tucker would grow out of that at a certain point. That's the argument.
Rebel.
The argument he's making is like, well, they're gonna look into the naughty things that we did when I was 19. It's like, yeah, like Tucker, you didn't grow out of it. It's not like now you're a fantastic person. On the daily, you're still doing this kind of stuff. So it's not that I needed to go back in time to find out whether Tucker Carlson was like this weird white supremacist D-bag. Like, it's just shocking that you were also a weird white supremacist D-bag all the way back in the day. It's just an interesting like through line to draw.
Yeah. And it's like he listed three groups, two of them he put there so that you know he hates gay people.
And he's racist.
Weird thing to put into your.
Well, that too, yes, definitely. I want to remind people though, if they're not familiar with Jesse Helms, former politician, Helms once said, "Nothing positive happened to Sodom and Gomorrah, and nothing positive is likely to happen to America if our people succumb to the drumbeats of support for the homosexual lifestyle." So Tucker Carlson, the guy in that picture, the little face like that, the guy that's never had a struggle in his life, was handed everything, defined himself as late as graduation from college by hating gay people and applauding those who murder them. Doesn't matter. We can point this out. He is uncancelable. And we should have known that when, after Media Matters found video of him referring to Iraqis as semi-literate primitive monkeys, didn't get canceled as a result of that. His audience likes him, not despite these things, but because of them. When they find out that he looks up to a guy who killed Harvey Milk, he's probably gonna gain audience share. But it's just sick that we live in a country where you can become successful specifically because you are this utter piece of garbage like Tucker Carlson.
I just need to say, like, this is a guy who says he's a man of the people and always fights against like the elites in the world while being born with that suit on, replacing his bow tie because he finally discovered that that was even a little too elitist, but he's still a pleated pant that somehow came to life. And his whole family's pedigree, his dad is like, he got his job in media because his dad is was an LA newsman, investigative journalist, so to speak, for a very long time. And his stepmom, that is responsible for even more wealth coming to the Tucker Carlson family, is a mix of the Swanson broth fortune and the Fulbrights. Like, this guy is an elitist, and the idea that he would ever, ever, ever give a crap about you for anything other than the ad dollars you translate into is psychotic. And the last thing I'll say about Tucker Carlson is he's like, this doesn't matter because I'm not running for anything. It's like, what do you mean? Does that mean you're not an important person in the political discourse? So people shouldn't know who their messages are coming from?
Yeah. No, he'd never care about what someone not in politics does. He'd never focus on that. Brett, who's your garbage person?
All right, here we go. Ben Shapiro. All right. Ben Shapiro is a man's 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 man, looking out for the important things in life. Home Depot being a solvent organization that sells tools, as he's heard them described, takes one to know one. So he is trying to say that you, as a non-woke human, need to go and buy Home Depot products because the left, you know that we are all yelling at Home Depot because of some reason, he'll explain, and then do something absolutely ridiculous. Take a look.
Here we are at Home Depot. As you know, controversy has now involved Home Depot as people are encouraging people to boycott Home Depot because Home Depot is not getting involved in Georgia's voter law controversy. Home Depot is doing exactly the right thing because, after all, they are in fact Home Depot. They are not in fact in the business of politics because you should be buying from companies that are not falling to the woke left. Home Depot, so far, is one of those companies. So here's what we're doing. And I encourage you to do the same. I'm going to go in there, I'm going to buy some stuff, and then I'm going to leave. Right, as you can see, I just went shopping at Home Depot. You should do the same. This wood, this board, this magnificent piece of poplar is now mine.
There he is. So a tool walks into a Home Depot. Tell me if you heard this one.
Mm-hmm.
Good Lord, that's what he looks like. Everything about this picture is, I would Photoshop something like this to make fun of him. And I wouldn't imagine fun of him. Would ever happen. He puts the poplar in a bag. This is the thing that he buys when he goes into Home Depot. Like, I am certain that that is for all the WAP stuff that he did. Like, that is the shape of his penis. That is the shape of his tapeworm penis. Like, it's got to be weird. This is my theory. It's not that these guys have tiny wieners. It's that they have strange ones. That's my take on Ben Shapiro. Oh
my God. But he got out in front of what would have been the TikTok parody of him walking in there, and he just did it himself. I'm going to go buy some stuff. So I'm going to buy this oddly small piece of poplar, which I'm looking up. And a much larger piece would have been $8. So was that $3? Was it $4? Did he get it cut, throw away the wrap? Maybe he paid the full $8. This almost feels like he's mocking Home Depot, saying, I'm gonna go buy some stuff. And then he spends like a latte's worth of money there. It feels like he's mocking himself and Home Depot far more than he's mocking us.
Yeah, as Cenk reported yesterday, based on an old TYT article that was done by Alex Koch, the major fundraisers for Ben's organizations include the founder of Home Depot. Mm-hmm. So as much as he's saying that a lot of people are performatively doing these boycotts, look, you're doing the opposite of a boycott. It's all performance. It's hilarious. I also love whatever he's doing to his t-shirt and his belt is just strange to me. Like the weird half tuck. I don't get it.
I did not notice that.
It's just like, this is his look. And he's just like, what do people buy in the Home Depot? What do they do? What is it, wood? Like, there's two options.
They do bad impersonations of humans.
He went and got, someone was like, anyone who's had to work with poplar understands that it is not magnificent. I don't know that. I just know that like, to get that board at Home Depot, either you go to like the little shelf area or you have someone else cut it for you.
Mm-hmm.
Like they go, okay, can you make this long? And they go, yeah, sure, boom. But like to buy something that he could have gone and bought a tool made in America. Like they could have, he got a Milwaukee drill or something like that. But he won't, but he gets this and he puts it in a bag. It's just absolutely fantastic and he couldn't be more trash.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a very good garbage person. It's just, and it's like the Tucker thing. It's like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that they're awful. It doesn't matter that they're pathetic and lame.
Right,
like exactly. The little interstitial little clip that he put in there reminded me of Jesse Waters' old, like he makes like movie references for like people who must be 80 plus. It's just all so lame, but somehow tons of conservatives, including young ones, are watching them. Seems a little weird. Anyway. Those are two good garbage people. Let's see what other garbage we have. 25,000 of you voted in the poll this week. And coming in at number 5 with 4% of the vote, greedy football owners for trying and failing to start a super league. Coming in at number 4 with 12% of the vote, Senator Sinema for sharing dollar tips after killing the minimum wage increase. I'm not actually familiar with that particular one. Number 3, I believe, with 15% of the vote, you have Jim Jordan for turning committee hearings into shouting matches. Man, he actually beat the football owners just for shouting. Anyway, number 2 with 27% of the vote, Marjorie Greene for her America First caucus disaster. Marjorie Greene, you were such a failure that you didn't even win this. Number 1 with 42% of the vote, Ron DeSantis gets it this week for trampling on Floridians' First Amendment rights. I never know which way you all are gonna go. I am very glad that that's what you ended up choosing. Their anti-protest law, definitely political garbage. So thank you to everybody who voted. And Brett, thank you for being here with us. Great to have
you,
Brett.
Thank you for being here. John, it's always great to
watch you later on.
Later on tonight at twitch.tv/TYT, you can watch and actually be on Common Room. So we're gonna have we're gonna answer the age old questions that are the most and least thought provoking questions of all time that have plagued the great thinkers and stoners since for millennia, essentially. So watch that, be involved. Me and Brooke are gonna pull you in from the Discord. It's gonna be a lot of fun.
Awesome. I'm going to read one last super chat that just came in from Gentle Jen that says, picture Ben Shapiro sitting at home looking at his prized slab of poplar thinking, we did it. I can see that. Anyway, thank you, Brett. Thank you, everybody, for watching throughout the week. Thank you to everybody who tuned into our Earth Day special. A lot of people here put a lot of work into it, so we really appreciate you supporting it and caring about the environment enough to stay invested. I know that those numbers are unfortunately too low because I can see the numbers on our environmental videos, but we're going to try to get people to care about it. Thank you for being a part of that process. But anyway, I'm going to be leading the first hour of the Young Turks with Cenk Uygur and Noemi Prinz later on. The first power panel back in studio, so you're not going to want to miss that. But until then, stay safe out there, stay sane out there. We'll see you soon.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.